session number 11582, row 5.
Mr. Albert Hurst, row 5. While you were in there, we were talking about your time in the Marie Corps section, when you were in the line, yes, before the Somme offensive, and we were talking about the conditions in the trenches. What did you get to drink while you were in the front line?
Well, we had the tea. We had our tea was served at tea time and breakfast time, depending on the conditions of bombardment and access.
Did you fill your water bottle?
Yes, we were advised to keep a full water bottle under all circumstances.
So you weren't supposed to drink that?
No, indeed.
Would you drink water from the shell holes?
No.
Were you told not to?
Very definitely so. Nor from pumps, and various pumps and things like that. Were forbidden to use anything other than the chlorinated water carted water.
So your water bottle wasn't really much use to you in the normal run of affairs?
No.
You weren't allowed to use
no.
it?
No.
Were you thirsty? Did you get enough tea to keep you all right?
I remember one instance. Over there, we got a new officer for the Manchester's, and I was passing the dugout, and he called me, he said, go and tell them, room up. Now, this was in July, glorious summer day, afternoon. I went round to the chaps, I said, room up. They wouldn't believe me, you know. I came back, I said, sir, the men won't believe me. He said, come with me and show me where they are and who they are. So I showed him these chaps and he told them to come room a shoe. So I got the first in the queue, you see. Well, I was teetotal. And I was obliged to eat rum to cover up the other chaps. And he filled an enamel mug half full of the rum. Well, I nearly choked on trying to drink this. I dashed away as quickly as I could and vomited and sicked it all back. Well, he didn't know one chap from another, and he kept going round and round and round. He got hopelessly drunk, nearly all our company. And at the same time, they attacked on the French, and they bombarded and they blew all our water tanks in. And for 3 days, there was no water. No tea or anything like that for 3 days.
So you were thirsty then?
I was, but all these other chaps went on. I just don't know. I was eating grass to try and take the thirst off.
And that was when the offensive had started, if it was July?
Well, they attacked on the French before the actual July attack, you see.
So you mean it was in June?
In June, as near as I can remember.
Not July?
No.
Right. Did you normally get a rum ration? It sounds a few.
Yes. I stand to every morning in the winter months. We stood to at dawn and stood to at dusk.
I'll come back to that, but you got your rum ration then, did you?
Yes.
And you didn't take it?
I didn't take a rum ration. But it was about a tablespoonful of rum, really. That was all it was.
Did anyone else take yours, or did it just not get issued?
No, it just not get issued.
Now, did you smoke cigarettes?
Yes.
Did you get a cigarette ration?
I have a vague recollection we did.
But you don't remember what type?
No.
What about your uniform? How did that stand up to the winter months?
Well, we had leather jerkins supplied. And
what were they like?
Adequate kind of jerkins to help to keep the winter off you. Many men were subject to trench feet, where their feet swelled up like a balloon, you know.
With the cold and the wet?
With the cold and the wet, yes. I myself was not subject to that problem.
Did you feel the cold a lot yourself? I mean, you didn't get trench feet, but was it?
No, I myself didn't feel unduly difficult over these conditions. Although, one instance where it was all very, very cold, the ground was frozen like a rock, and a German played on a tin whistle. We're very near the German trenches then, very still, quiet night. And he played Night of Stars and Night of Love from the Tales of Hoffmann. I didn't know what it was in those days. I knew it was something classical. And later I found out that what he'd been playing was the Tales of Hoffmann, Night of Stars and Night of Love.
So the cold to you wasn't that, and the wet wasn't that much of a problem?
No, I wouldn't say unduly.
What was your health like?
Well, I kept healthy all the time I was there.
What about the latrines? What latrine arrangements? Can you describe what the latrine arrangements were in the front line?
Well, it just consisted of an off digging. And a hole in the ground kind of thing with a board over.
And was there any paper supplied or anything like that?
I don't remember any paper. We used to use newspapers and things which we had, you know.
What about washing? Were you able to wash at all?
No. The chaps that needed shaving had to wait till we got out of the line with the possibility of using water.
So they didn't. The officers didn't enforce shaving then?
No.
What about just the waste of trench life? I mean, things like tin cans, just general rubbish. What was done with that?
I don't remember any particular.
Was there much of a problem with lice?
Lice? Well, as far as I know, everybody had lice.
When did you first get them?
Oh, we must have been out a month or two before I got them. Then, when we were in the Maricourt sector, this officer from the 11th Manchester's, he had us doing physical drill behind some ruined buildings and trees. Got on the top of the trenches and behind the support trenches doing physical drill.
But getting back to lice, were the lice a problem to you?
Yes, indeed. I never got rid of them. Although I took my shirt away because of the lice. And when we were doing this physical drill, officers had tunics off. He said, "Where's your shirt?" I said, "I've chucked it away, sir." He said, "Why?" I said, "It was lousy." He said, "Get to the quarter book and get one, get another." I got to the quarter book and this shirt seemed to be lousier than what I'd chucked away for some reason.
Did you try any methods of getting rid of them?
No. The only thing that was, turn them inside out. All of them, and with another candle along the seams to try and burn the seams, you see, where they seemed to originate from.
And did that do any good?
Well, some measure of controlling them. It didn't get rid of them.
Did they? I mean, why were they a nuisance? Did they bite, or was it?
Yes, especially when you got warm. They were full of blood, you know.
What did they lead to? Some, I mean, things that are related, like scabies, impetigo, skin diseases. Did the lice help? Did people suffer from that at all as a result?
Not so far as I was aware.
What about rats? Did you have much problem with rats in America?
Well, of course, we had our share of rats and mice, and in the dugouts occasionally. One of the chaps had an idea. They put some cheese in that, at the opposite end of the dugout. sat with a loaded rifle on his bed and shooting at these rats. And one or two instances of doing that, and he seemed to tire of doing it, and had to put up with the rats then.
Were you frightened of the rats? I mean,
no.
Were they a big nuisance? I mean, how?
No, I wouldn't say. We didn't regard them as a serious nuisance kind of thing.
Did they get at your food at all?
Well, we had to. My haversack was a hole bitten in it to get at the army biscuits that were in the haversack. Rats or mice had done that.
So how did you try and keep them away from your emergency rations and your food?
Well, you had very little chance of trying effectively to keep them away.
What about, were there any dead bodies buried locally or in no man's land at that time, before the offensive?
Yes, when we were next to the French, they had a dugout blown in, and the dead were left in this dugout, not completely buried by the dugout fall. No attempt to completely bury them. Now, when we first went into trenches at Maricourt, there was a notice on the German wire: farewell the 5th Division, welcome the 30th. And there are two dead Germans on the wire, as evidently been putting this notice up.
What about, I just want to know, we'll go through a typical day in the trenches. Yeah. I know there's probably no such thing as a typical day. Now, you mentioned stand to. What exactly did you stood to in the morning and in the evening? What exactly did you do at stand to in your battalion?
Well, everybody in the line was alerted at this time to take action, because those were the times of the day when attacks were mostly delivered at dawn and dusk, you see, particularly at dawn. And no matter whether you were asleep or not on duty, everybody had to be on duty at that time, as what they call stand to.
Where did you actually stand up and on the fire step, or were you just stood?
Well,
we stood
in the trench. You see, normally somebody would be on the fire step.
A sentry?
Yes, a sentry.
And how long would the stand to last for?
Possibly about a quarter of an hour, something like that, until you're adequate in being able to see the German trenches and assured that there's no action forthcoming.
And then what happened?
You stand down.
And that's when you got your rum, you say? Or you didn't?
No. Yes, that's when the rum was issued.
But you wouldn't
stand down.
What would happen next, then?
Well, the ordinary routine of trench warfare, changing of sentries or whatever.
Would you have your breakfast after stand down?
Yes, yeah.
And what would breakfast be? What would you eat for breakfast,
well,
usually in the line?
Some bacon and bread, if there were any bread going.
Would the bacon be brought up hot?
Yes, it was reasonably hot.
And you got bread with it?
Yes. Now, the issue sometimes with short of bread, we get two slices per man per day, and the rest will be made up of army biscuits. But that was sort of exceptional. We would rather get more bread than that. But on occasions, the bread was so tight that it would only run to two slices per man per day.
So that was your breakfast.
Yeah.
And then you say the normal routine started.
Yeah.
If you were on sentry, what did that involve, being sentry?
Well, you're actively prepared with rifle to apprehend any advance and to warn your immediate soldiers of your section.
And how did you go about doing those duties? I mean, did you actually stand with your head over the top, or did you use a periscope? How did you go about it?
Well, you usually try to get in some position where you screen by a sandbag or sandbags, so as to not expose yourself to snipers.
Would you look over continuously, or would you just take a look every so often?
Well, you were supposed to look over continuously, but in practice it didn't quite work out like that.
Why not? Could you just explain?
Well, you're subject to weather conditions and the like. And certain positions were known snipers' marks.
So you looked over as you could, basically?
Yes.
And did you use periscopes at all?
Yes, indeed.
What were they like? Were they homemade or army issue?
Oh, they were army issue. There wasn't a surplus of those.
There weren't many?
Oh, no.
So you didn't usually have them then?
As far as I know, about one periscope, perhaps per company.
So you'd not often get...
They certainly didn't come in our direction.
So you didn't use them either much or at all?
Myself, I only lived through them, I think, on two occasions.
Did you get a good view through them? Was it better than looking through a
gap? Oh, yes, and much safer indeed. But, you see, the reflection of a mirror caught a German's eye, and it was a very prominent mark to shoot at. Now, one instance, one of the chaps, was looking through the periscope, and a bullet hit the top of the mirror, bounced off the bottom, and he had a part in the middle of the air, and it scraped the middle of the air without entering his skull.
So they'd shoot at the top of the periscope?
Yes, you see, because you saw the reflected light on the mirror.
But that was still a better chance than sticking your head up.
Indeed.
Now, how long would you be on duty as a sentry?
Oh, perhaps an hour or two.
And then someone would take over?
Yes.
Was it a shift system?
Oh, yes, we used to... Date relief of the section that was holding the trench area.
And what, if you weren't on, you said the normal routine of trench life, if you weren't on sentry, what would you be doing during the day?
Well, you'd be stood around. Is there any fatigue you weren't wanted doing?
What sort of fatigue would you get given up in the front line?
Up in the revetments of the trenches.
Repairs?
Yes.
And what did you use, mainly?
Well, I mean...
As revetting?
The French were particularly good at that. What's more, the trenches of the French were very well done with revetting.
What did they use?
They used branches.
And what did we use?
Yeah. We didn't use much, except wire netting, if any.
So you might be on. What else would you be put on? What other fatigues might you be given in the front line?
Well, normally meal fatigue.
Fetching the food.
Yes. Oh, yes. That was.
Any others you can think of during the day?
No, I can't just think of anything.
If you weren't on fatigues and you weren't on sentry, what would you do?
Well, it'd be.
How would you spend the day?
Hanging about in the trench or the dugout.
With your friends?
Yeah.
What would you talk about? I know you wouldn't know exactly, but what sort of thing would you talk about?
We used to sing, "We have a navy, a fighting navy that keeps our foes at bay." That was one of the songs we sang.
Were you being sarcastic then? So you thought the Navy had an easy time of it, did you?
Yes, indeed.
Did all of you think that?
Yes.
So when you sang "We Have the Navy Song," you were being sarcastic.
Yeah.
Any other songs you used to sing while you were waiting?
No, that was one of the prominent ones.
What else would you talk and do? Would you talk about the war or about home or, you know, what sort of thing?
Mostly about home. Discussion of what was in what papers we had. We used to get papers and swap them about with each other.
Papers from home or
papers? Yes, papers from home.
See, that would be one topic. Yes. Could you talk about the progress of the war much?
No. No, as far as we could say, it was more or less stalemate by sticking in these trenches.
So it was more home life that interested you?
Yes.
Did you see much of your NCOs or your officers in the front line during the day?
Well, the NCOs were, of course, more or less others, but the officer wasn't so readily available.
Where did the officers stay then, the dugouts?
Well, they had a dugout for themselves.
Whereabouts? Was it in the front line or the second line?
They usually sort of took a form off the front line.
Do you see much of them? Did they do inspection tours? What did they do?
Oh, they came round daily to inspect and to assure themselves that we were in readiness.
So only once a day would you see them?
I can't just remember that.
But did you see more of your NCOs?
Oh yes, the NCOs were with us all the time.
So they sort of ran the trench life?
Yes, yeah.
Now, just during this period, did you get much artillery fire before the battle started?
Oh yes, we were always subject to artillery fire, particularly at meal times and things like that. We were always subject to shrapnel, and during the normal trench occupation, subject to heavy bombardment and mortar and rifle grenades.
What was it like being under bombardment like that? I mean,
terrifying in some instances. Only real thing was to crouch down in the bottom of the trenches and hope that they won't get hit.
Would you feel safe at the bottom of the trench or in a dugout?
Well, the dugouts weren't practicable. Very poor quality, our dugouts. The German practice in the bombardment was to start at one level and then to keep elevating the guns, you see. Then to get to the extreme elevation and then to start coming down again. And we had some awareness of the possibility where the next shell salvos might be landing.
So if it landed in front of you, it was quite likely to come nearer you the next shot.
Yes, indeed.
If it landed just behind you, then you were all right.
You take some hope, but they couldn't deal with that manner of firing.
Could you tell the difference between the different types of shell?
Oh, yes.
What types could you tell?
Well, it was what we call a whiz-bang.
What was it? What was identifiable about that?
Very peculiar bang and a whistle. They were sort of small shells, possibly less than 18 pounders.
And you have the bang, then the whistle?
You could identify what we call the whiz bangs. And then, of course, heavy artillery, the very heavy artillery, were very recognisable when they were firing these 10 and 12 inch howitzer stuff. The howitzer shell differed in sound from the field gun shell.
In what way?
The howitzer had a peculiar sound, like a sun-drawn breath, as we describe it. And the field gun shell firing was much opener and recognisable.
Was there any you were particularly afraid of? I mean, which was the worst type of shell to you?
Well, the ordinary field gun firing on the whiz-bang. You sort of had more anticipation of the field gun firing than you had of the whiz-bang firing.
So the whiz-bang was worst?
Yes.
What about Minenwerfers, the mortars? What were they like?
Well, we're always subject to mortar unlike a grenade attack. We're coming out of the trenches and we've passed some chaps that have just been hit by rifle grenades, and all the clothes were blown off the bodies, and skin and blood, you know. All exposed, all the body and flesh exposed. That was rifle grenade firing. Now, on these advanced SAPs, we had wire netting over the top of the trench to stop bombs being chucked in the trench.
Wouldn't they just explode above you?
Well, hopefully the way that the effects they were chucked off. But in practice, I never sort of known the rest.
What about snipers? You've mentioned them before. Were they a big nuisance to you?
In some places, yes.
In what way?
Well, they're known to be a sniper covering a certain area, and he had to have an awareness. Well, so-and-so is killed here, so-and-so is wounded. Whatever you do, be alert in exposing yourself. Now, my idea was to try and find a sniper, and we sort of spread out in the trench, three or four of us, so we thought they would expose themselves to one of us by being in a different setting. I got up and had two or three shots of where I thought he was, and then I stood down and waited for the other shots, and I waited for the others to fire each time. When the fourth one had fired, I was getting up again to fire. I put my rifle up. I was just going to get up when two bullets hit the sandbag just where I was going to get behind. So I got down and I went round and told the others what had happened, and we took this trying to find the sniper.
You gave up?
Yeah. I think one of them told the machine gunners about it. And I think the machine gun was turned on the Cypress post.
Did you ever do it? I mean, you were the eighth best shot in the battalion. Did you ever do any sniping?
No. I was never asked to do it for some reason.
Would you have fancied it?
No. I would then, but as I look back now.
What about. These were sort of day-to-day fighting going, you know, the sort of background things. Did suffering casualties, like, I mean, from the odd shell and you know, sniper, did that affect people's nerves at all during the early period?
No, people seemed to accept it as a sort of recognisable possibility.
And you accepted it like that?
Yes. It was never discussed between us.
Did you worry about it?
No, strange to say, I was more frightened in other instances than I was in the trenches.
So you didn't... things like religion were to help to you then?
No.
What about in the evening, you know, after the... There were quite a few activities that could go on in the evening, weren't there?
Well, the engineers would come up and they'd mark out if there were any alteration to the trench system. They'd tape it out first, you see, and then a digging party would get up and get on the job doing it.
So the digging party would be taken from the frontline troops?
Yes.
And were you ever on that?
Oh, yes. It's a singular thing. There'd be a pile of picks and shovels on the floor. And the rate was one pick to three shovels. It was always me that got the picks and had to start first. Funny thing. It's all leading a great pile. And we'd be marching up in file, you know. Everyone had to pick one up. Always me the pick.
You say you marched up. Wouldn't you be on that working party when you were the support troops then?
Yes, when we were supposed to be out on rest, we'd go up.
So you didn't do it when you were in the front line, that's what I mean?
No.
Right, that's not what you said before, yeah? So that was something you did when you were out on rest?
Well, yes, we'd go up from relief rest periods and do digging whatever required and redoing the trenches.
And you always got the pick. Did you find it hard work?
Oh, yes. They said, come on, kid, get started.
What about, were you within, you'd be within shot of the Germans, presumably, sometimes. Wasn't it a bit dangerous?
Very much so.
How were you careful? I mean, did you try and keep it quiet?
Well, the practice was to give a covering party of machine guns when there was any working party, but doing the wire or things like that. So the machine gunners, the Lewis gunners, crept out first and got in a position where they would cover any attack on the working party.
And to keep the heads down, the Germans' heads?
Yes, that's all. But in practice, you wouldn't sort of fire until you had a target.